It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's out of jury duty. She's here. It's our 500th episode. We'll celebrate, plus talk about the new version of Windows. It just came for the insider folks. Some big, big changes to the new creators version. It's all coming up next. Oh, yeah, and Paul's CES report. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 500, recorded Wednesday, January 11th, 2017, our quincentennial. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Harry's, for guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set free. Just pay shipping. Start your free trial today at harrys.com. Use the code Windows. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover Windows Weekly. And here she is, the rural juror, back from her brush with law, I don't know, justice, scales of justice. Did you wear a blindfold, Mary Jo Foley?
No, I wore my Princess Leia hair, and I didn't get chosen, so that worked out.
That's a reference to 30 Rock and Tina Fey's techniques for avoiding jury duty. So you didn't get picked?
I did not.
Okay.
Nope. Well, I can't say I'm sad. I was very glad to be released on day one.
The defendant's loss is our gain. Or maybe it's the prosecution's loss. I don't know. Also, Mary Jo is at all about Microsoft.com, her ZDNet blog. Paul Thurrott's also here from THURROGood.com.
I was also wearing my Princess Leia headphones last week because I was on a plane, but they're like Bose, you know, noise canceling headphones.
We all did it in honor of Carrie.
We did.
Kind of made me sad.
I know.
Prince and Bowie, and those all made me sad-ish.
Yep.
But for some reason, losing Carrie Fisher was a real blow. First of all, she's my age. That's probably some of it. But also, I had just listened to her interview on Fresh Air, and she was so funny and alive and fun.
I think she lived life a little harder than you did.
If you want to
feel a little better by yourself. I will say, I mean, I was 10 or 11, whatever, when Star Wars came out. I mean, I grew up on Star Wars, right? I mean, Star Wars changed everything for me, and she was a big part of that. You know, I mean, you can't.
But also, she had a second act and a third act and a fourth act that was great.
That was
great. I just loved it. But we're not here to talk about dead movie stars. We're here, or Star Wars, much as we might like to. We're here to talk about Windows and Microsoft and. Let's kick things off. Oh, I just restarted because I got a Windows update.
Oh, yeah. Nice. We should have put that in the notes.
Patch Tuesday yesterday, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so you're running the released version of Windows 10. I mean, there's not much to say, right? It's
cumulative update.
Yep.
Bug fixes.
14393.693.
Nothing huge, right?
Did you just say that off the top of your head?
She did. Impressive.
No, I memorized it because I knew it was going to come up.
It's her
today.
Locker combination.
Oh, boy.
Very impressive.
It's amazing. That's the same combination I have in my luggage.
Very impressive, Mary Jo. And then there was an update for the insiders as well, yes?
Mm-hmm.
A big one. Yeah, this time, a lot of additions, changes.
Is that a little weird to you, Mary Jo? I mean, doesn't it seem like maybe this should be winding down? But all of a sudden, they release what is easily the biggest build yet for this generation.
Yeah. I know. Yep.
Well,
I was surprised.
When is it supposed to be out?
April.
Originally March, but now people are saying April.
Well, I suspect it's more of a March, we finalized it, April, we release it kind of thing. I think that's the real.
That's what they did with Anniversary, right? It was done in July. They released it August 2nd. So probably
someone from Dell told Brad point blank at CES it's coming out in April.
You know,
And Brad got hounded about that by Microsoft and their PR firm, and they kind of went away in a little huff. <You know?
laughs> So what did we get that's so big,
oh, man,
new and different?
Where to even start with this?
Yeah. This is they're calling this their creative update.
Right. This is the creator's update.
Creator's update. Okay.
Yeah. The test build number that came out was 15002, Fastring Insiders PC only. And if you look at this blog post, it's kind of reminiscent of the old Steven Sinofsky days in terms of it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And there's tons of stuff in here.
Well, maybe more important or as important, also buries some interesting stuff. I literally nodded off about three quarters of the way through it. I think it's about 15,000 words. And Mary Jo pointed out something to me, I guess it was yesterday morning, which I didn't even see in there. Maybe we should talk about that first, because I think this is kind of a big deal.
Let's talk about this first. So this is buried way down in the list of new features. And this is something that leaked over the holiday period. It's the ability to pause updates for 35 days. This is in this test build. What people didn't realize is this is only for pro, enterprise, and education users, not home.
So we can't pause it.
No. If you're running Windows 10 Home, you don't get this. And this was mentioned way down. There were a lot of other features mentioned ahead of this, things like, you know, some changes to tabs and Edge, some new inking settings. It just went on and on and on. And then snuck in the bottom was, oh yeah, and you can pause updates for up to 35 days, which is something really big and something very welcome, I think, for the users who are going to get this.
Yeah. Yep.
The problem, yep. Paul and I were debating this on Twitter yesterday, is home users don't get it.
Right. And my argument is that home users are the ones who need it the most. But anyway, please.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, offices need it because it's you know, potentially changing line of business software and stuff, right?
Right, right.
Let's presume the home user is using kind of traditional mainstream
well,
stuff.
Well, no. In other words, when you look back at 2016, I was preparing my end of year stuff like everyone, you know, does at the end of the year. And
it's time to do it, I think.
I mean, just common sense, Leo. I was originally going to write just an all around Microsoft, you know, this is what happened, but there was so much Windows 10 stuff. I actually split that off and I just did a Windows 10 end of year thing. And the top four events, there were four major events. Three of them were negative and two of them had to do with updating. And it is very clear to me that Microsoft has an updating problem, and it's tied to this Windows as a service scheme, and that the sheer volume of updates is kind of overwhelming this legacy code base. I think with this, you know, again, I threw this out as a non – I wrote a post kind of complaining about this, and I got some pushback from some people who do stuff like we do, like Peter Bright, for example. And great. I this is something that I think needs to be debated. But my contention is that regardless of what the audience, the core audience this is for, and you could make the arguments for businesses, right? It's tied to business versions of Windows 10. I think the fact that Windows updates are unreliable means that normal people should have the ability to defer updates for 35 mm-hmm. days.
Yeah.
So that they can be tested out in the wild.
Right.
And then they'll get them after they're known to be good. I think this preserves the Windows as a service scheme. Obviously, security updates or like critical updates, Defender updates would go through immediately. That's fine. I really feel strongly that they need to allow normal people to do this. I don't expect them to make it the default. I think from sort of a moral standpoint, they should, they won't. I mean, so I'm not even going to pretend that they're going to do that. But surely there's some happy middle ground, right? And at the very least, and I mean the very, very least, this capability should be given to consumers, because I want to be able to write a tip that says delay updates for 35 days and save yourself some heartache. You
know? So let's debate it again.
Okay.
I love this idea of being able to postpone it 35 days. I would be the first person to click that box. But you just said so that they can be tested out in the wild. Okay. Yep. Who do you think is testing it out in the wild?
Yeah. So
we
Right. Oh, right. Somebody's got to test it. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You mean today we are. Like, in other words, the way it is today is people who can't delay updates, i.e. the general public, are who's testing this. Mm-hmm. That is this equation turned on its head. It should be the other way around. And that's what you're saying, right? In other words, I think, right? I don't want to put words in.
Yes. So the way that, you know, when Microsoft let go a number of testers a couple of years ago, and they instigated the insider program, they added all these preview rings. The idea was there'd be like progressive rings of testers, and by the time it hits the mainstream, hopefully most of the bugs are out of a patch, an update, or whatever.
That hasn't happened.
It hasn't.
Right.
Right.
It hasn't happened.
Not in every case. It is not. And we know from like the webcam issues that came up last year, the Kindle reader issues, there have been a number of things that have shown things get through for various reasons. So that means we, the people who are on the current branch, the home users, are the ones who are kind of the next line of defense before this goes to enterprises, right? So the customers they mostly want to keep happy are the enterprise customers. They're the ones who are paying for the more expensive versions. So they want them to be able to have more options to turn off patches and postpone patches with things like current branch for business and this new pausing option. But those of us who are on home, like the average person, you don't have that option. And they're going to continue to treat us as the ones who are the testers.
The
and am I saying
the
I think this is good? No.
You know, it's like in World War One. They send the masses over the wall there so they can run at the Germans and get mowed down. Meanwhile, the people who paid a lot extra can sit out back and
we're cannon fodder. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's the exact opposite. Well, not the exact opposite. It's the wrong approach, and that's my argument ultimately. I mean, we can kind of debate the details and yada yada yada. But they really need to give people this capability. I think it should be on by default. I think the very fact this feature exists proves that Windows 10 updates are unreliable, but okay, you don't have to believe that. Just as a human being, I think we can all agree that this capability should be handed to the normal people who are going to be the most screwed over by problems with updates.
Okay, here's the other problem that one of our readers, listeners named David Chadwick brought up yesterday on Twitter. He said, okay, you're acting like there are things that are security updates and non-security updates, but there really aren't anymore because we're in cumulative update land, right?
Yeah.
So you can't separate that.
You can't. Like the thing that came out yesterday that we just got, the cumulative update for Windows 10, there may be some security things in there. If you look at the list of what's in it, it doesn't call out any.
Yeah. Right? So I disagree with this, actually. I know what you say. Cumulative updates are a reality, but there's no reason for you to get the latest cumulative update for 35 days. I mean, that's... That just falls into the thing. But let me see if I can find the pitch here. I probably don't even have it. Damn it.
No, I was just going to say the idea is you don't want to see people postponing like 0-day fixes by 35 days, right?
But since we don't separate things out anymore, we have to make you do everything right away. Right?
Because otherwise, I just wonder if they can separate them.
I think what you just said is because we have artificially changed how we do things, we can no longer make things good for you. And what I'm saying is they can change that, and that's stupid.
I agree. You could have a 0-day update that's a separate update that you push out. Yes. And say, you got to take this one, buddy.
Right. We're not just getting cumulative updates. We're getting updates all the time. It's not just, you know, I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry. But if you go to, I'm sure on their original blog post, there's a picture, and it says something like, you can delay updates to 35 days. Some updates, like those for Windows Defender, will continue to get through or whatever. Those updates should continue to get through. I'm not talking about all updates. Right. My job isn't to implement this fix. I'm literally taking the position of a user advocate and saying, this system harms people. We know that from last year. Mm-hmm. Let's make it better. I like this delaying of updates thing. I like it. Microsoft, by the way, does have different kinds of updates. They have quality updates. They have feature updates. They have, you know, there are more of them. So it may not be like it was in the past, but there is still some notion of granularity in updates.
You can. Did they not add Ethernet wired connections to the metered connections, so you can do it on metered or wired, and that will allow you to defer updates even on a home connection, right? I mean, I know that's a crap workaround.
It's a workaround, is what that is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But at least it exists.
True.
At least, that's true. But again, but it does exist. And that's the type of thing I would write up as a tip. And it's exactly right. The type of thing a normal user would never know about.
Never know. Yeah.
I'm literally talking about protecting the people who don't read our stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's a certain audience out there who knows what Microsoft is doing. There's audience out there who pays attention to what we write about and other people like us. But then there's the 99% of normal people who just, you know, they buy a computer and they get on with life.
Isn't the issue really that shouldn't Microsoft not push updates that are going to break your system anyway? I mean...
Yeah.
Yes. By the way, last year I called on Microsoft to halt improvements to Windows and have a reliable computing initiative like they did for trustworthy computing. If you think about it, reliability is another form of trustworthiness. It's not about trusting security updates or trusting the security of the system. It's trusting the reliability of the system, right? The resiliency of the system. And I just feel that this Windows as a Service thing, and I think the evidence is very clear that this is true, is not there. That, it's a legacy system. It's used by over a billion people, 1.5 billion people, 400 million something, whatever, for Windows 10 specifically, on a variety of hardware that is unprecedented and unduplicated in any other personal computing market, whether you're running Linux or Mac or Android or whatever. It's a complex stew of nastiness. And, will they ever get it right? Yeah, I think so. There are smart people working on this stuff. Yeah. They're good people. But, the ability just to delay, see how things go out in the world, and then get it is so smart. I've been waiting on – I waited not quite 6 months, but, I mean, the new X360, the Spectre, still – I only very recently got the anniversary update. That thing came out, July 31st or whatever it was. What's the rush? Would anyone even notice?
I mean, the reason they wanted to do it, remember when they first introduced this concept, was, hey, it should work like the phone and you should just be getting updates. Remember, at first we didn't even know what were in the updates, right? They were pushing us updates and we're like, what's in this? Oh, we're not telling you. Then they started telling us what was in the updates. So the idea is, can they make the PC experience like a mobile device experience? And so far, it doesn't feel like it's working like that, right?
Nope. It's nothing like that.
I know. The idea is if they did let home users turn off updates for 35 days, I would guess the vast majority would not know about that or would not even try to figure out how, right?
That's exactly right.
They would just not even... No.
Which is why it should be on by default in the home version of Windows 10, which is what I wrote yesterday.
By default, defer for 35 days?
By default, it should defer for 35 days, exactly. Wow. Because if you're technical enough,
no
one want those updates. No, there are people testing it. That's the thing. So we have this group of insiders. Right.
It's a small group.
I don't know. There
are people testing it all the time. But okay.
Right. No, there will always be people who do it. Look, I mean, there are rings of... testers still, and the problem is one of those rings is normal people, and unfortunately that's the big group, and I just feel like that's the mistake that's happening here. They've got this backwards. There will in fact be people, I mean, even if it's like 1% of Windows 10 users, 1% of Windows 10 users is still a lot of users, and of course in that case you're getting people who are explicitly taking that risk and doing the right thing for the community or whatever. It's the type of thing. It's like enlisting for the army versus being sorry. We've hit the M's and you're in.
Paul is fighting for the little people, and God bless you.
I'm not trying to be Jesus here. I'm just saying. No.
Good.
It just seems like the right thing.
You don't have the beard for it, Paul. I'm just saying.
I could squeeze one out in 30 days.
Right. I like what you're saying. I think it would be great in a perfect world, and I think we. Would yep. I think in reality, if we let everybody have this on by default, it would just push back by 35 days when they start testing Windows patches.
I bet you that's the logic of this. Absolutely.
There's no scenario where I think they're going to do this. I want to be really clear about that. They're never going to do what I just said. Never. But you could make these little halfway.
What if
home users?
What if you had a negative ring? What if people could say? Like, I'm a novice. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What if there were another category where...
Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt, but let me draw a comparison to something that is in Windows 10 today. In fact, it's in the same exact place. If you go into advanced settings for Windows updates, and I'll just look at it so I can tell you exactly what it says. And this is in the shipping version of Windows 10. It's in there today. It says, choose how updates are delivered. Mm-hmm. One of the options you have is to get updates from Microsoft, which is the, you know, used to be the only way to get them, but also get updates from and send updates to PCs on my local network and or PCs on my local network and PCs on the internet. The idea being that you will save bandwidth if another computer in your home network or your corporate network has downloaded an update. You don't have to get it from the internet. It helps everybody. It helps Microsoft. It helps you, right? It's a good thing. By the way, that's on by default in Windows 10. How is this any different? Why would this not be on default for home users if this feature's on by default? This helps you. It helps your bandwidth. Are we saying that my bandwidth is more important than my reliability? Why wouldn't this be on default? I know they're not going to do it. But if you just kind of look at it in context with other things that are on by default in Windows 10. I'm going to be freaky about this topic. I got to stop talking about it. Like, I feel so strongly about it, and I know it's never going to happen. So it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying, people. I'm trying.
You're trying, but yep, I think your calls are falling on deaf ears.
I know. You think I'd get used to it after 20 years, but okay.
Yeah.
What else is in this update, Mary Jo?
I know. I'm like when you started out with Leo just said maybe introduce a negative ring. Yeah. I started thinking along those lines too. Like, what if there was one more ring, right? There's already ring, slow ring, release preview ring.
What's the analog? In Linux, many Linux distributions, this has become very common. You have a stable distribution, which is guaranteed to get all security updates, but that's it.
I'm describing that thing, and what I'm saying is that should be the default, and I just promised I'd stop talking about it.
Well, but you get, as a Linux user, you get the choice, and most people do go for what they call, Ubuntu calls it LTS, the stable version, and then you have to opt in for, there's two additional versions. There's a, a testing version, which has rolling updates, and then there's a, like, alpha version, which is pre-test, and which is kind of like insiders. So you choose, and really the truth is, a novice is just going to get the LTS because they're not going to know to look any farther. And then, but somebody like me is going to say, no, I want more recent versions of a software, so I'm going to do a rolling distro. And that works.
The way I conclude this article is to say that Microsoft needs to add a step back to setup, right? They've done this thing in Windows 10 setup where they've eliminated a bunch of choices to make it faster. But these are choices that people need to be confronted with. It's kind of a weird decision. And just give people a choice. Just say, here are the ways you can get updates. Just let them pick based on what it says, you know? And that actually was sort of my common sense compromise on this thing, because I know they're never going to do what I want. Which is, in other words, just give people the choice, which is basically, Leo, what you just said in Linux, that you get that choice.
Well, and even the default, if you're not sophisticated, is going to be the most stable of the three.
Oh, yeah. No, one of the choices is not. Exactly.
You know what? And I think what Mary Jo's saying is that, but if most people would then opt to that, who wouldn't opt for stable? But I can tell you, Mary Jo would opt for stable and Paul wouldn't.
By the way,
and then you have enough guinea pigs.
You know, there could be a third option where it says you want to live on the edge. You can join the Insider program. Click here to find out more.
That's how it is in many Linux distributions. Yeah. So on my server, for instance, I run a Debian stable. It's not going to change. It's only going to get security fixes. That's it.
And that's how a server should be.
I know. But that's what I want. And then here I run a rolling distro, so I have the latest and greatest software all the time. And by saying that, Mary Jo, I think you get a large enough pool of testers. And what you get is people you want as testers. You don't want a novice as a tester.
Thank you.
Because all the novice is going to say is,
Windows stinks next time I buy a Chromebook or next time I buy a Mac.
Exactly.
I heard this never
happens. Novice is not a useful beta tester anyway. So, but what you want is the enthusiast like me and Paul who say, I want the latest and greatest. But I'm opting not to have the most stable.
And I do think there is a big enough audience between people who want nothing and insiders, right? That there is an audience. I don't know the number. How could I? But I think there's a sizable enough audience in there, combined with telemetry, if they could ever get that thing working correctly, that they could actually have a good amount of feedback to determine after 35 days if this thing is stable enough to go out. And by the way, we could also talk about things like stage rollouts. Like, we know that Microsoft does that with the big updates, you know, the ones that come once or twice a year. Right. Maybe that's how Patch Tuesday needs to go. Not that they're calling it that anymore, because maybe everything needs to be staged. Maybe that's one of the ways you can approach the reliability issues they have, right? Dribble it out. See how it goes. Dribble it out, you know. And if it's going well, make it go faster. I mean, who needs that's this stuff right away normally, right?
Well, but everybody needs for zero-day protection.
No,
so you
can
always push the security fixes.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's already part of the scheme.
Yeah. Well, I could just say, I mean, Linux is a very small universe, but I could just say it does work well in the Linux universe. Mm-hmm. And in fact, people who run Linux will often have, like, on one machine, they'll have different versions. Like, my server is stable, and I always want to run stable, and my laptop is rolling because I want to run the latest. And even one person might live in both or all three worlds.
Yeah.
I think that's fine.
I think enough can go wrong on a stable version of Windows 10 today that
stable should really be rock solid.
Exactly. Really, and Peter Bright, made this case the other day on Twitter, you know, that you should be able to at any time install the very latest stable build and have it always just work 100% of the time. That should be the point. Well, this is the known good starting point.
If I'm running Microsoft Server, I mean, I presume that's Microsoft Server is that way, right? People are relying on it for their websites, their SQL servers, their Exchange servers. They're not going to push updates. They're going to break those.
Well, patches there break too. They have to recall patches and pull them back.
A properly configured server is going to have a lot smaller attack footprint than a desktop, right? Because desktops tend to be everything's on. Servers tend to be everything's off. And so, hopefully it's modular enough that you're installing only the things you need to keep that thing up and running.
I guess my point is this has been solved in at least one space, and I think solved well.
And I just want to point out the thing that you said solved it is exactly what I'm asking for.
Yeah.
It's literally what I'm asking for, and I admit that it's too far for Microsoft to ever do.
Why?
And so because it's just too much of a step.
Yeah,
I think it would just add like a whole other level of complexity to a system that's already super complex, which is patching all these different hardware types running different versions of Windows 10.
Yeah.
And then you add the delay thing too. I don't know. I feel like you're right, Paul, that they have to get their house in order before they add one more level of complexity to the whole patching thing.
Well, but they've also moved in the wrong direction, because this cumulative updates makes it harder to do, because you don't know what the security, as you pointed out, you don't know what the security fixes are.
Yeah.
So you can't factor those out anymore. It's hard to do. You know, somebody's pointing out in the chat room, Apple has the same problem. You know, there's no such thing as stable OS 10.
Yeah.
Right.
It's interesting.
What a terrible world we live in.
Yeah.
It's just so weird.
Well, it is better. Remember, Windows 95 era, everything blue screened for, you know, at the drop of a hat, right? And
were so happy that
things were simpler then. But a program could blue screen the whole computer then. Yeah. You didn't have memory protection. You didn't.
Sure.
I mean, so we have come a long way. You don't get anywhere near the crashes we used to get.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Takes an old man like me to remember those days.
You know, Leo, back in the day,
people are forgetting. I've been looking at Paul's Instagram and Facebook feed has all these throwback pictures. You posted one of you. You were wet behind the ears in 2004 at CES. You looked like such a kid. And I'm thinking, I looked exactly the same. I was doing the radio show from a booth there. I looked exactly the same. So, I'm a little older than you, Paul. You're such a young lad. What else? I think we've covered the insider preview, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There were literally 1,100 other features.
There were
a lot. Spend as much time on each one of them.
Yeah. there were a lot. Is there any other highlights you want to?
Cortana becoming your out-of-the-box assistant is new, where you're going to be able to talk to your PC on first setup and say, hey, Cortana, help me set this up.
You can't do that now?
No.
You have to set it up after you finish the install, you set up Cortana.
So
no, it doesn't just set up Cortana, right? It helps you set up the PC.
It allows
Cortana's
you to use,
there.
Yeah, you can use Cortana. It's kind of a nice accessory.
Why? What do you mean when you say all your files are right where I left them?
This is how the conversation is really going to go. It's like, Cortana, I don't want to use my Microsoft account to sign into Windows 10. Okay, now configuring your Microsoft account. No, I don't want to use your Microsoft account.
11. 11.
Yep.
Yeah, 11.
Yep.
The one
in there that struck me was the high DPI thing. And I've been talking to some guys who've been testing this, and I guess it actually doesn't work. But, you know, one of the big issues in Windows 10 is high DPI, and all these legacy Win32 apps in particular don't scale properly, right? And so Microsoft has fixed some of their apps, like Office works now properly high DPI. But there's lots of apps that don't. And so now if you go into the program properties, which is a nice old school style, you know, Win32 dialogue, irony alert, you can tell the system to override the DPI scaling behavior, and then it will scale the app better, maybe. But I've had a few people throw me apps where, like, Steam is a good example, where the Steam window is full screen, but the contents of the window are up in the corner because it's drawing at that native resolution. So
That's a hard thing to do. High DPI is hard to do.
I don't think they're ever actually going to fix this. I think the only real fix for this will be the gradual elimination of Win32 apps, you know, that over time will rely less and less on these old apps. And they'll never be fixed. They'll just go away.
Mm. And that's, you know, I understand that. That's a hard thing to do.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
The new share experience. The resizing,
smoother resizing of Universal Windows Platform apps related to this, right? Capture a portion of your screen of your desktop with the same photo capture capability that's in OneNote, right? Capture a particular region of your screen, copy it to the clipboard. That's built into this one.
I do that all the time on the Surface Studio. It's so awesome with the pen.
So I do this today. If you have OneNote 2016, that's part of the application. But I guess if I understand this correctly, now it's part of OneNote Mobile, meaning you get it by default in Windows 10, right? So you don't have to have
Office. I see. So if you'd installed OneNote desktop, you'd have it.
Yeah, you could. If you do this keyboard shortcut right now, it will work on your computer if you have Outlook 2016. But I believe now it's because it's part of Windows 10, it becomes a feature of Windows.
Oh, that's okay. All right. I was wondering how they did that. Yeah.
I think that's what that means.
Do you want to talk
about green screen? Green screen of death.
Wow.
Yep.
GSOD. Wow. You only get a green screen of death if you're running an insider preview. The regular screen of death will remain blue.
Oh.
Yep.
A little perk for the insiders.
GSOD.
Yep. A green screen.
Yeah, because your first reaction is going to be like, God damn. Oh, look, it's green.
It's green. It's so pretty. I must be an insider. I'm special. Yeah. I'm special. You don't want to talk about the new double pinion input methods for Chinese keyboards?
Maybe not.
No, we can. I wrote an opinion piece about that as well.
power management changes
there. Yeah, that one's important.
Yeah.
New set as meter connection option for Ethernet LAN is one thing that's new.
Yeah.
Very nice. It's not, as a couple of people have pointed out, it doesn't go far enough for some metered use cases, but it's one more thing you can do, which is good.
This is funny because Mary Jo does not run an insider's build.
I do not.
Right.
But she has to write about it every month.
So. And you know what's great? No, what's great is everybody installs it. Like, it comes out. People rush to install it. And then you start watching Twitter and you see what people say is working, not working.
Right.
And people are just like,
Twitter's good for that kind of thing.
My Twitter feed is an interesting circular thing where people complain and complain because there's no new build. Oh, my God, there's a new build. Oh, this thing's broken in the new build. No, this thing doesn't work in the new build. It literally is just the same, you know, over and over again.
Every time it is.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm always ragging on Twitter. I hate Twitter, except there are some really good use cases.
There are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is pretty funny. For some reason, this is an example of why you wouldn't want to use a rolling distro. I'm using, of course, Linux on this desktop. And for some reason, Twitter has now turned into some sort of Gothic script for all the names. And it's just some update. Did
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, what the hell? Why not? Although I have to say, the president-elect's feed is much more interesting with the kind of gothic Donald J. Trump. I like it. I like it.
Wait, Leo, we forgot to mention Bash. There were tons of Bash updates.
Oh, goody, goody. Tell us all about it, Mary Jo.
They're all way over my head. They do. I think there was a separate post somewhere, though, that probably listed them. And there were a lot of them. Rich Turner on Twitter, who is Mr. Bash, had a whole lengthy list of all the different little updates.
Just do pseudo app get, and a bunch of text is going to scroll across your PowerShell window.
I love it when that happens.
It's pretty much what Linux guys are looking for.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
just like a bunch of stuff that if you read it quickly enough, it looks like it's upgrading something.
That's all I want. Let me just, Rich Turner. Let me just see if I can find.
Yeah, let me try to find it too.
He probably link it in his tweets, right?
Yeah. His handle is Rich Turner, T-U-R-N underscore M-S.
M-S, got it. Got it.
He's got it somewhere here.
Checking out the new Windows Insiders build. You can now run Windows apps from native Ubuntu command line.
Woo!
Woo! So if you type, no, I'm not kidding, you could type notepad.exe, Mary Jo Foley.
Thank God.
Yay.
Finally.
Return. Never take your fingers off the keyboard.
There it is. It's January.
Can you replace like the Windows shell with the command line?
Many fixes, but a couple of bugs. What's new for Bash? Holy cow. All Bash sessions must be created at the same permission level. Oh, you know, it used to be you had to run at root, so that's nice. You don't have to be root anymore, I guess, which is about time.
Is that same font, Leo? Is everything?
It is everything. I'm like, okay, so there was a little problem with
that's amazing.
HarfBuzz, believe it or not, HarfBuzz has been updated and it broke in Finiality. Because the Infiniality, this is something people who use
what
Linux.
What the hell are you talking about?
Infiniality's core developer is MIA. He's just disappeared. So Infiniality's not being updated, and now broke my HarfBuzz. So
that was a beautiful example of what I must sound like.
I gotta roll back. I have no idea what you just said. Or maybe
parsing logic.
Yeah. It may be that I could just, probably what I'll do is just go into the config file, manually edit it, and everything will be fine. I think I saw something on Reddit. I could just copy that. So, look at all these things. Wow. Switch to font. I kind of like this font, though. I might stick with it.
It should add the words ye old to the beginning of every
oldie.
Sentence.
Everything's ye oldie. Ye oldie. fixed issue where Windows path was truncated in ye olde WSL.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Improvement to TCP close for more So it's a lot of Linux command stuff.
Okay.
Here's a big one. I know you'll be excited about that. They've switched the default term environment variable to xterm-256.
Yeah, I've been wondering when they were going to do that.
It's about time. Well, my glyphs have not been working well, so that's good. Good. All right. Fixed error where shortcut name was incorrectly localized. I was wondering why everything was Romanian.
Mm-hmm. So this font is actually an improvement then.
I think so. You're a graphics designer. What is that? It looks good. I like it.
Actually, it looks familiar. It looks like Georgia or, you know, one of those not quite
it's a
Times New Roman type fonts.
It's
serif
that it's being
Franklin Gothic.
Yeah.
You know,
something weird.
Yeah,
I love the angle brackets are very
those are crazy.
They're very rococo. Yeah, don't you love that though? I think that's how I want my.
I think it's hard to read. No.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't rate highly on the readability scale.
I will fix that pronto. And while I am fixing that, you guys, if you want to take a break, let's take a visit to my razor. I am excited about my Harry's razors. My son got Harry's for Christmas. That was really cute. It was a little weird because I should have checked with my ex before because we both gave him Harry's. So he has two Harry's kits. But I was really pleased. For decades, one big razor company, I don't need to tell you which one, has dominated, and they've used their dominant position, frankly, to gouge, to increase prices relentlessly and reap immense profits at our gentleman expense. Harry's is changing all that. If you haven't heard of them before, it was started by two best buddies, Jeff and Andy, who were fed up with being overcharged for razors, and more importantly, for blades. So they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a fair price. Harry's shave set, just like this one. This actually is the one that starts at $15. This is the Truman set. I actually gave Henry the Winter Winston, which I really like, but this is the Truman set. Lovely, a soft touch handle. It's weighted, which I think is something important. You know, if you've been using one of those cheap disposable razors, because like everybody, you want to save some money, you're going to really appreciate the luxury feel of a razor from Harry's. It feels good in your hand. You get five bladed cartridges with lubricating strip and a trimmer blade at the top. That's nice to have. And you get three of those. This is all for $15. You get the rich lathering shave gel, and not some sample size, but a full bottle of that. I love the travel blade cover. I use it all the time, so when I throw my razor in my shaving kit, I don't get cut when I pull it out when I arrive. You're going to love this. Harry's is a great shave at a great price. In fact, they're so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You just cover the shipping when you sign up. Harrys.com, get the free trial, and then at checkout, enter the code Windows. You get an additional post-shave balm, which it really smells good and is nice. Where is that? I put that somewhere. I probably pocketed it. Oh, here it is. The post-shave balm. Full size also, and you'll get that free. Harrys.com, use the offer code Windows, and we thank Harry's so much for giving me a close, clean shave, and my son too now, and for supporting Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about Windows and alleged Windows 10 design makeover surfaces. Now, when you use the word surface in a headline.
Yep. I know.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
So you mean it comes to the surface as opposed to.
We understand the pitfalls of using a Microsoft product name and a Microsoft blog post.
So you're not saying that they're making over the surfaces. You're saying a makeover has surfaced.
Yes.
Am I correct, or was it a pun?
You are correct. Okay. No pun intended.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is this Windows 10 design makeover we're talking of here?
So you remember the good old days when there was a Microsoft design language that we all talked about called Metro?
Metro.
Remember that?
Yeah, then Metro? They said you can't call it Metro anymore.
Right. It got banished because there was a legal issue with another company. But the idea of Metro was to come up with a unified look and feel, a type font, kind of like the whole, what would you call it, like user experience behind Windows. After that, there was another update to that language that was codenamed Bazel that happened a couple of years ago. And now we're on the third iteration, which is codenamed Neon. MS Power User found some screenshots that people seem to believe are real of what the new and improved design language for Windows 10 will look like. It has a design element called acrylic that blurs background. Okay, so I have to tell you, I am the least qualified person in the world to talk about this because to me, all design looks the same.
Yeah.
Like if you held up three different iterations of Windows 10 to me and said, which one is Metro, which one is Neon Blah, I can't tell you. I look at words. I don't look at design elements, you know?
Well, I think you're not alone in this. This was not a massive shift, right?
No. Yeah. It's supposed to be an incremental update. I know Paul would notice it more because he's more attuned to graphics and has that as his background. Like people who get all excited about Aero Glass, I'm like, I don't even really know what that means. I know there was some transparency in Windows at one point. But
awesome.
I don't, like, if you showed me
awesome.
Aero Glass and you're like,
Aero Glass, by the way, is fighting words for many people in our community.
I know.
You know, just the removal of that. And that's funny. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So for me, this is all Greek. But other people, this is like gigantic. It's like, oh my God, they're going to blur the background. There's going to be some transparency. And it's going to be so amazing. And so if you're one of those people, you should check it out because neon is coming. And if you're like me, you won't even notice it.
I believe what she just said is if you are like Paul, a visual oriented simpleton, you will be excited
no,
by the changes.
I did not say that.
Expert for anything new to talk about.
No.
I know there are
people who care, right?
Yeah, I think the UX stuff is important, and I think this is a big deal. I mean, the site that uncovered this kind of said this is a minor thing, and I'm not so sure. I mean, you know, Metro was obviously a big deal, and they've kind of evolved that over time. And there's a kind of, I don't know what you call it, but in Windows 10 today, there is a standard set of UI things that you see in a lot of apps, right? Like the little collapsible hamburger thing on the side of a lot of apps and so forth. So I look at this as a pretty big change. But
by the way, this just in, PC Guy 8088 has had his first green screen of death on Insider
Nice.
Build. Congratulations, PC Guy.
Enjoy the color.
Well done. Is this the only design element that's different? This camera?
That's the camera. No, that's it right there.
That's old. That's an old design element.
Let me look at the leaks. These are allegedly leaked screens.
Yeah. These aren't screenshots, right? They're prototypes or whatever.
Like, I obviously looked at it and I didn't really. Yeah. I couldn't tell the difference. So Paul's going to have to fill us in on this. I don't.
Right. Well, I mean, look at that.
I mean,
is this blur around the edge, the acrylic that you're talking about? The behind?
No, I don't believe so. I don't see any blur on this particular shot, other than the fact the background looks blurry. But I think if you were to, this is the Groove app, right? So if you were to compare it to the Groove app today, the same elements are there. You have that sidebar, which you can collapse with a little hamburger control. It's got the basic same layout on the right side. It's just that they've tweaked the look of it. It's like adding a style sheet.
Oh. So it's in the side nav. That's the acrylic here. And it does have a kind of a something going on in the background. It's not a solid black. And it's not quite a gradient either. You see at the top, it's very dark, gets lighter. But it's not lighter top to bottom. It's kind of a curve.
Yeah.
It's gray.
It's gray.
It's gray.
No, but it actually more. No, I see the difference. It's more natural. It's not so flat. It's not so computery. It's more like the real world looks.
Yeah, and it dropped the kind of vestigial title bar stuff too. Like if you look at the window controls
clean.
In the upper right, they're not
clean.
Right up in the corner where they've been historically.
Right.
So you know, in some ways, I guess you could say it's subtle. But anytime Microsoft changes the UI, like that to me looks.
That's ugly.
By the way, that app that's white. Is the same app as the one on the bottom, which is black. It's just a
that's
like
ugly
a theme
compared to this. This looks so much nicer.
But it's the same app. I mean, it's
somebody
just
themed
color scheme.
It pink.
Yeah. So,
there's some more acrylic. See that? It looks like somebody's thumb print. Okay, good, nice.
It's a smudge.
It's a smudge. They've smudged it.
The next UI theme will be called pastel.
So the blur behind Kanye's blur.
Oh, so by the way, that app you're looking at right there, that's how it looks today.
Oh.
So.
And it's making me queasy. Nice animated GIF. This is the leak.
That's
these are the
pretty much
images.
The reaction I have to Kanye anyway, so that makes sense.
Okay, here's something. Look at the. Wait a minute, that's going overboard. I don't like that. See the they have specular highlights on the tabs?
Specular? No, that's just a background image.
Okay, never mind. Let's see how these things start. I saw a version with tabs that have specular highlights. I know
it was obviously ripped off from BOS. I don't know how these people sleep at night.
Yeah, shocking. It's as if J.J. Abrams decided to throw up all over it.
Jeez. Or who's the guy that makes the Transformer movies? That would be even better.
Yeah, Michael Bay. It's kind of a Michael Bay meets J.J. Abrams.
Yep.
Okay. Well, there you go. There really is nothing to say about this. You're right, Mary Jo.
It's not happening till the fall.
Okay,
so,
good.
I think.
No, and there are many people super excited. It's coming in Redstone 3, the MS Party.
So is it kind of accepted that this is what it's going to look like? Or?
I would guess it would continue to evolve somewhat, but this is probably early renders of what this was going to look like or may look like.
As Battlecam's pointing out in the chat room, Microsoft really was the first to do flat. Then Google copied it with Material Design. Apple has certainly flattened.
They did the same. Actually, when you look, it's really strange. This I think these look ugly, but in iOS today, if you look like the mail, the news app or the Apple Music app does this, where they have this really big chunk of text up at the top, and that's a it's a very Windows Phone like UI. They've made it even weirder. Like they've just gone off in some very strange direction with it.
Now this is a story Mary Jo can really sink her teeth into. Windows 10 desktop on Azure from Citrix coming this quarter.
Okay, this is actually pretty exciting. I'd say it's exciting to as many people who care about.
Wait a minute, you just said the word exciting.
Design languages.
Oh, boy.
Okay, think about
this. It's going to be a long further 500 episodes. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, wait a minute. Congratulations on your 500th episode. Here, I didn't bake you a cake.
It's today.
It's today. Congratulations. 500.
Leo, it's like turning 50. Nobody wants to celebrate this milestone.
I know.
Aww.
No, this is a big one. This is a big one. I don't know. When was our first episode? I should have said something. I completely forgot.
What was our first episode? I mean, it had to have been September-ish 2006.
Just go to twit.tv/WW1.
I'm sure I was singing the phrases of Windows Vista.
Now, it does have the album art of today's show because that's the way it works. But Paul was the sole host. September 28th, 2006. So it was 10 plus years ago. The road to RC1. And what is the RC1 for? Vista.
It's Vista. Wow. You know, Leo, it's all been upside since then.
Introducing Paul, the real Vista ship date, Windows security, the new Office ribbon, more. Remember how everybody hated the ribbon?
Yes.
Yeah, and I never understood that, but yeah.
Wow. Yep. You can. It's audio only, but we can go back and listen to it even. Backspaced. If you just press the play bar here, we'll hear the original. Yep. Let's hear how young Paul Theroux sounded.
Netcasts you love.
Can you change a word processor?
Well, I sound 10 years
exactly.
Younger.
But you know, they have an interesting statistic at Microsoft when they get their feedback with every release, and customers are always providing them with information about how things are going and the features that they want. And every year, the top 10 feature requests for Office are already features that are in there.
Yeah,
people don't know. It hasn't changed at all.
I have one thing to say to that. Nerd.
Nerd alert. Nerd alert.
CEO, Microsoft has this thing that
we've come a long way, baby. Audio quality's come a long way anyway.
That's true, too. Yeah. Yep. By the way, a little embarrassing factoid about the beginning of Windows Weekly. for the first couple of months, at least, I had to use a Mac to record the show because Skype worked better on the Mac.
We wouldn't let you use your PC.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
Wow.
Yep.
Frankly, I'd still like to enforce that, but I've lost control.
Yes, that probably wouldn't go over well.
Completely lost control. No, we're using our Skype-osaurus is Windows now and has been for some time. Right. The original Skype-osaurus was Windows as well. Come to think of it, but this predates Skype-osaurus. I was using a Mac probably.
Yeah, the big change technologically from my perspective is that you used to run the podcast off your computer.
Right.
And so we've had instances where the famous time when you rebooted the computer right in the middle of the show.
No, that's right. I was using Windows.
I was explaining to you how you could get to this option, and I said, well, don't press it now. Click. The show just disappeared.
We were literally
back in the cottage,
I would have been up in the little room upstairs, and I was on my Windows machine, recording a Skype call as we talked in Adobe Audition. I would hang up and then I would edit it and put it out. It was just me.
Yeah. So now you're just so separated from the people, Leo. You don't even know what's going on.
I can't tell you what a relief that is.
But to be fair, the biggest change on the show obviously has been the addition of Mary Jo.
Huge improvement.
I think we can. Yep. Because obviously, get rid of. Yeah. No, I mean you've completed it. Like I think you've.
You complete us.
You were the missing piece.
I keep you guys on track. That's
you
my
do,
job.
I have to admit. Yeah.
Like you just tried to derail the Citrix story, but don't worry.
Oh, totally. I will.
She noticed.
I will continue
Paul.
To try to do that.
Darn it.
Sure, you didn't.
Oh, 500 episodes. Anyway. Congratulations.
I know. Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
And when do you remember what the date was that you joined or the episode that you joined?
Yeah, me? No. And I wanted to find this the other day and I couldn't.
Here's how we can – this is close to it because we have our notes and I think the notes are from when you joined. So if you go back to 2011 –
must have been
the earliest note that we have is August 4, 2011.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She probably joined before then, but I bet it was 2011, just based on the notes.
All right.
But
the first time I was on, I was upside down. Do you guys remember
that? Yes, for a long time. We couldn't figure out.
Well, and you guested too, right? So you did some guest shows, I think, before you joined.
I think that's what happened. I know.
I had installed a driver that – flipped my webcam upside down somehow, but I still did the show upside down.
Yeah, we fixed it in post. We took a computer, we turned it upside down. Nice. Well,
those were the days.
Before the show is over, I'll find it. But meanwhile,
Citrix, guys.
Citrix, big deal here.
It is. It actually is a big deal because there are a lot of people who want to run Windows 10 desktops on Azure. And right now, you can only do that if you're doing tests or research. You cannot do it legally if you are trying to run it in production. But later this quarter, you are going to be able to if you get Citrix's Zen Desktop Essentials. That is the name of the product you're going to need. You also are going to need Windows 10 Enterprise, and you need to have Software Assurance. If you have all of those pieces, you're going to be able to run your Win desktop remotely, Win 10 desktop. So for a number of people in my Twitter feed, this was a really big deal when Citrix went public with the date for this week. Citrix also is going to do this thing that replaces Microsoft Remote App, which lets you run basically a single application directly from Azure. And that is going to be another product coming from them this quarter called Citrix ZenApp Essentials. So both of those are going to be out in the matter of a couple of months, I would guess, if not sooner. And this brings a very interesting new virtualization capability to Windows 10. Of course, the catch is you have to use Citrix. But Citrix is...
It sounds like you're injecting yourself with something.
Citrix is a Microsoft partner who so many people have thought over the years Microsoft would acquire because they're so tightly joined with them. They're a tier one partner. They are very instrumental in a lot of the virtualization solutions for Windows out there. But Microsoft has never bought them. They've just remained a loyal partner. If you're a Citrix user, this is going to be really interesting in the next few months. There you have it, guys.
Very exciting.
See, I didn't interrupt that at all, even though I was
probably
terrified by this topic.
Okay. Microsoft
traumatized
reveals...
Even.
I am traumatized.
He is, I can tell.
Microsoft reveals its long game strategy for Cortana.
Yeah, I mean, Mary Jo and I on this show and Brad and I on our site have kind of written and talked about this for a long time, you know, that as last fall kind of happened, where's Microsoft? You know, Alexa has been going gangbusters in the home. Google announced and released Google Home. When's Microsoft going to jump on board? And they were silent for the whole time. It was crazy. I mean, the October event came and went, nothing, no mention, no nothing. And then finally, late last year, they started talking about this. And I talked with them, Microsoft, at CES, of all places, about this. Because, of course, now Cortana is being integrated into cars and into all kinds of devices via IoT and so forth. And so that stuff is going to happen. But I thought their take on this was kind of interesting because they are taking a long game approach to it. And they actually took away some lessons from the smartphone world where, I don't know if you were paying attention, they didn't actually win that battle. And they sort of decided to approach this in a different way, and that maybe the right approach, you know, for this kind of thing isn't, you know, to have all the apps and whatever, but rather to kind of build on the fundamentals and have the best underlying service, one that works for their core strength, which is productivity first. But their ultimate goal, which is actually kind of cool, and I realize it's a little vague as well, is to make Cortana like something necessary that if you take away this capability, you'll really, really miss it. You know, whereas today this kind of stuff is just a little bit of a nicety, you know, And I go into more detail in the article on the site and kind of explain how they're doing this and how we've seen some features kind of come in. There's like a help.me kind of thing with Calendar where, you know, the goal has to be that you can say things to Cortana and they happen, right? Not that you have this stumbling block, which I think is the big problem with these kinds of agents or bots or whatever you want to call them today. Microsoft also draws a big distinction between bots, which are things that are attached to a service, right? Like there are bots in a messaging app, there are bots in whatever app. Agents are something that Microsoft sees as being attached to you, and you'll typically just have one of them because it's like a personal relationship. And thus, this thing is far more important, but it also has to be right, that you'll never develop a relationship with an agent that isn't intelligent. Like if it doesn't work, then it's, you know, you kind of move on. And obviously, there has to be an element of trust as well, just as there would be with an actual personal assistant, that they need to know your schedule. They need to know what's going on with your stuff. They need to be able to prompt you if you say something in email where, let's talk about this next week. It needs to be able to prompt you next week and say, hey, by the way, you said you were going to talk to Bob next week. It's next week. Do you want to set up a reminder or do you want to do that now or, you know, that kind of stuff. So they actually do have a strategy. And I think that's nice because, again, for about 6 months last year, especially, I think we were all openly questioning what the heck they were doing. I mean, it seemed like they were just ignoring it. And so I think this year is going to be kind of a big push for that stuff.
They told you guys point blank, though, we are not going to make something like the Echo, right?
They literally said we are not going to make our device a device. And in fact, they said that was what made us interesting to partners. That one, even though we are seeing some companies coming on board with Alexa, the problem with Alexa is that Amazon may decide that, that looks like that kind of device is doing well. We should make one of those. You know, you don't want to be undercut by the maker of the platform. And so their deal is we're not going to have a home device, but there'll be all kinds of home devices, you know, just like they have all kinds of PCs or whatever.
Yeah. I just laughed a little because remember that was what people said when they did the Surface originally. They said, oh, wait, said you weren't going to compete with your partners and you just built a PC.
Yeah. So I mentioned they learned from the lessons of the past with smartphones. I think you could apply that to the same thing.
Yeah, yep. Maybe.
Privacy. This is going to be a feature, I think, in the new creators.
Privacy is going to be a feature.
It's going to be a feature.
Finally.
And I'm very excited. Well, no, they're going to give you more control, right? I think that's what the story is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all there is to say. Huh?
Yep.
Privacy.
Yeah,
here comes privacy. Get ready.
No, I mean, I just, from a sort of an editorial perspective, I don't believe there's any privacy problem with Windows 10. But I think there has been a huge discussion and argument around that, a lot of FUD, you know, slung around that. And I think this is Microsoft responding to that. It could be them responding to some legal stuff as well, because obviously we've seen some stuff, especially around that.
In the EU, especially,
And, you know, more to the point, I mean, whether we're talking about this dashboard that's part of the Microsoft account dashboard on the web or the stuff they're doing in Windows 10, there's never an example of more transparency being worse, you know, so I think them being more transparent about it, them giving user choice, you know, we talked about user choice with regards to updating. They're now going to give users choice with regards to how their Microsoft uses what some people would consider to be private information. So it's good, right?
So they're going to do a Google. Google has you have a dashboard. They're going to do a Microsoft account management portal. It'll tell you what they know about you, right?
Well, they already have one, right? And I think the big difference on the dashboard, I don't know if there was a privacy tab before, but one of the big differences is they finally do have that single location where you can go in and say, here are all the places where we've collected your information. You can erase it all. It's important.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Best thing, though, is the Express settings changing, right? Like right now, if you pick Express settings when you set up Windows,
I always do.
Glosses over everything. Right. You don't even know what you're agreeing to.
That's what I want.
And they're going to make a change.
That's what I was looking for. Don't bug me. Just do it.
No, they're going to actually make you see what you're choosing for a lot of these settings that before were just glossed over. Yeah. And I think that's good.
I guess so. I mean, you could always choose custom if you wanted to see everything.
I know. But some of them, like people would say, I didn't know I agreed to blah. Yeah,
that's true. That's why they're
In writing the Windows 10 field guide, I, of course, explain what all those settings are. In other words, when you choose Express settings, what are you agreeing to? And there is not a single item in that list that gave me pause. There's not one.
Right.
And I know that could be different for different people. I know some people take this stuff very seriously. It's not that I don't. I mean, but I know some people are just kind of living on the edge when it comes to the privacy stuff. So
I'm living on the edge, baby.
I mean, you could always say custom settings or whatever the
right.
whatever
it was
you called. Could. Yeah, people never do that though, right?
No.
No, you always pick the... No. Okie dokie. Hey, by the way, I found a Polish website that I think I've tracked down now. This is Dicky.pl, of course, the very famous Polish podcasting site. And apparently Mary Jo Foley was a guest on the 29th of Czerwica, and then a guest again on the 7th of Lipka. But stopped being a guest and was really the co-host. See, guest Mary Jo Foley, mm-hmm. right about, I think it was about 220, episode 220. Let me just go down here and...
let me look at my notes and see if that corresponds to
anything. See if it corresponds. I think it was Grudinia or Lipka right around then that Mary Jo... I wish I understood Polish. Maybe she appears as a host in Five Serpinia.
So literally, the first episode of the notes is 221.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Serpinia is August, so I guess, in Polish. So August 5th, 221.
2011?
Yeah, it's August 4th, is it? Or
well, if my Polish is correct, it's... But, of course, remember, Poland's a day later than us.
Okay. Well, by the way, my notes could be completely wrong as well.
I think it was the 5th of Serpinia. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, no, right,
yeah,
I see. Yep,
yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so very exciting. Thank you for joining us and making us whole.
No, that was awesome. It was a surprise to be asked.
You missed your 5th anniversary. We'll do something. We'll party on the 6th.
Usually you get it's a clock, but it's a mantle clock. And then after 10 years, you get the full.
You're going to love the timepiece that we send you.
Wait,
the gold.
Couldn't I get like a gold version of Notepad or something?
The gold Notepad. There
the
you
golden
go.
Notepad.
No, you're going to get a Chromebook.
You're getting a Dell.
You're getting a Dell.
You're getting a Dell.
Chromebook. Microsoft kills. Wait a minute. This is the you buried the lead. Microsoft kills Windows Essentials.
Oh, let's hold off on that one because I have a tip related.
I
to
guess
that.
They weren't that essential.
Yes.
Yeah, so Microsoft's killing.
Well, by the way, it was essential in 2012.
Well, that's right. A good point. Right. Yeah, a good point.
No. Can I ask one question? Are you going to bring this up on the tip? The one thing that people are going to miss is Movie Maker.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yep.
So I think we will have an answer for that.
Yeah, a temporary answer, so you're going to move quick.
A workaround.
Okay. Right.
Neither of you went to CES.
No, I went.
Neither of you went to CES. Oh, Paul went to CES.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Was it fun?
Oh, Leo, it was a freaking nightmare. Why do you ask?
Yeah. it was a big PC show. I was really kind of shocked at the number of PC things. So, good. Yeah, you covered it for Therat.com. I forgot about it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the highlight for me. And in fact, I'm going to do things differently next year because of my experience this year, but including probably taking a hot air balloon there instead of flying. But...
Oh, was it a bad experience getting there?
I got home 48 hours after I was supposed to.
Oh.
So that was good. The good news is I got to spend some quality time with my sister in Phoenix, which was completely unexpected on all of our accounts.
Wow. Oh, yeah. My. Was that because of snow at Logan or?
First, it was because of an unbelievable JetBlue screw-up that it's not even worth discussing. Okay. But
It's getting harder to fly. Than everybody.
Yeah, it was really bad. And then the problem with the JetBlue flight, if I had gotten it, is we were getting this huge snowstorm in Boston. So as that flight was delayed and delayed, we were getting into the beginning of the storm. If it had gone, you know. And then eventually it got to the point where, well, now it's the storm has occurred and that we can't fly. And so you're flying home from Vegas. I mean, think about it. There's 136,000 people or whatever. All the flights are booked.
All
and so
leaving
your
at once.
Chances
yeah.
of getting on yeah. a flight on Saturday or Sunday are just almost non-existent.
So
the goal was just to get out of there and then book a flight from somewhere else to get home.
See, you flew to Phoenix. I get it. So you must have just gotten home like yesterday.
I got home at midnight on Monday.
Wow.
Morning, Sunday night, Monday morning, yeah.
Well, welcome back. Are you glad you went? Do you need to go?
You know what? Sort of. I mean, the problem is a lot of, like you said, a big PC show, so HP, Dell, Lenovo all had big stuff going on. By the way, outside of the convention center, which was awesome, Microsoft was in the same place. And so next year when I do this, if I do this, it's going to be a smaller thing where I might
just
not
go to the meetings.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that, but, that
so
stuff
that's
was
funny
because
Microsoft used to have a big booth and they abandoned that several years ago. Mm-hmm. But they are now
they,
doing a suite.
They got a motel. That's right. Well, just actually, it's bigger than that. Honestly,
you say a motel?
No. It's big. It's bigger than that. It's okay. They take over kind of the bottom floor of the Venetian or the Sands or whatever it's in.
Oh wow, that's huge.
It's only for press. It's not an open thing to the public, nice. But it's a nice space. They do some good stuff down there. It was worth going to.
Good. I mean, yeah. I
actually, Mary Jo,
it'd
almost be worth going for you as well. I know you love Vegas, so it's something that broke.
Nope.
Paul goes, so we don't have to
think about it. Convince me to go to CES in Las Vegas.
You've been, right?
I have been.
Yeah.
And I will never go again.
Right.
Well, I haven't gone in 6 years because
it's so horrible.
Oh wow.
Hate it. I mean, I've been going to CES. I went to CES for 10 years and then
so
it's like Comdex.
This is good though. This is you're like Rip Van Winkle. You haven't been in 6 years.
Right.
Did it seem different? Was it bigger? Was it more brash?
Let me tell you something. It is identical.
Oh, that's funny.
the only thing that's a little different is, remember, you know, Comdex got really big and then it got small and disappeared.
Yeah, it disappeared.
CES got big and it got bigger. And the way CES gets bigger, because the Las Vegas Convention Center is the size of the Eastern Seaboard, but there are all these hotels around it. And so, of course, what it does first is it expands out to the Sands. And at the Sands, you would have like a – they have a big convention center as well, not as big as the LVCC, but big. And you bus back and forth or taxi, whatever. I describe this as like a metastasizing cancer. Like it's basically, it has oozed into every hotel that's anywhere near the convention center. So CES is like this thing that's just like, it's gross. It's just everywhere. And it makes it impossible to get anywhere. It's awful.
Yeah.
You're really recommending really good, it right now.
Yeah. No, I'm really selling it. CES well, let me tell you about my hotel experience. That was fantastic. Too.
Where did you stay?
At the Excalibur.
Oh, why? That's the fake King Arthur place.
Listen, I booked this thing so late because I was hoping that by procrastinating, I wouldn't be able to go. And finally, my boss said, I don't care how much it costs. Just book the damn thing and go. And I said, damn it. So anyway, next year, we'll do it differently. The PC stuff was great. There was a lot of new PC stuff. That was awesome. They did some Cortana stuff, some car stuff. That's pretty much most of it. We got to see the Snapdragon 835 on a prototype
that's
device.
Exciting. That was cool. Yeah.
That's Intel exciting. Announced a little mini card computer, that sounds neat, right?
The they DC card. You could put it in any device, like a refrigerator.
Yeah, because it's literally like the size of a credit card. Yeah. Well, it's a little thicker, but. So I focused on that
thing?
Stuff. Yep, the Dell Canvas, which you wrote about.
Tell me about that. What is that? Is that a studio, a Surface Studio?
Yeah. It works. It's really what it really is a display that has obviously multi-touch and smart pen compatibility, but also these kind of widget physical things you can put on them, sort of like the Surface Dial, sort of like that. Remember about a year ago there was a Lenovo IdeaPad something. It was a giant 19-inch tablet you could take off of a base. It was a PC. And you could put it down on a table and use these like air hockey looking things to play air hockey.
Yeah.
The Dell Canvas supports that kind of stuff. And so it's sort of what people have been asking for with Surface Studio in the sense that it's a screen, but it's not a screen that you would put upright. It's literally like a Cintiq or something that you would leave on the desk. But it gives you this giant canvas for drawing.
So it's not a PC. It's just a display.
It's just a screen. That's right. Yeah, you can use it with any PC. So in this picture.
It's substantially lower in resolution than the Studio, right?
I'm not even sure.
It's also a lot cheaper.
Right.
Yes.
It's $1,800. It's going to be available March 30th.
To be clear, in that photo, it's the thing on the bottom, not the thing on the top.
Yeah.
It's only
you've got a Dell. That's the top thing, an all-in-one or something. And then you get this canvas monitor that is. You know, a number of people when I've shown the Surface Studio said, gosh, I just wish it would lie flat.
Yep.
So there's one that lies flat.
Mm. Yeah, and actually, if you scroll back up to that photo, the thing at the top is a brand new all-in-one computer that Dell introduced this week, last week as well. That thing doesn't lie flat either. In fact, that one doesn't support pen at all. It doesn't support touch. I think it does support touch, but not pen. Uh-huh. But it doesn't lie flat. It's just an all-in-one computer.
How much is the canvas? Again, PC not included.
$1,800.
Yep. 1800. Wow. Yep. Wow. Work at the speed of thought. Well, that's pretty fast.
That is.
That's as fast as you can work. It's got two pucks, two dials, not one. Two dials, not one. All right.
It was interesting.
I know now that my next PC is going to be the Lenovo X1 Yoga. I want the Yoga.
Yeah. That's one of my choices, too.
Keys retract. Mm-hmm. So when you it lies flat when you flip the monitor. Yep. So it's really truly a tablet.
Yep.
I think Lenovo makes very nice PCs.
Yep.
This one will be a couple of years old, man, almost, the Surface Book, right?
Yeah. There's a 15-inch version of the X360, the HP machine. It looks interesting to me. That's a potential.
Those are gorgeous.
The X1 Carbon and X1 Yoga are potentials. Yeah. There's also like LG Gram. Is a line now. If they have 13, 14, and 15-inch computers, the 15-inch version weighs 2.4 pounds.
Yeah, I like that.
That's crazy. Yeah. Like that might be less than the original iPad. I mean, I'm off the top of my head. It's very light. Like, you pick it up and you think, well, this is just a shell. There's no guts or battery in there. And they're like, no, this is the computer. You know, it's working, right? Those are kind of interesting. I would look at those. There's a new Samsung, they used to call it Series 9, but I think it's a Samsung 9, which is a 15-inch screen and a 13-inch body. Very, very interesting. So,
Samsung also announced their Chromebook, the Plus and the Pro, the ones they did with Google. Yep. And I actually immediately ordered the Plus, which is their ARM-based version. The two are identical except for processor. One's Intel, one's ARM.
Yeah, and availability. I think the Intel one's going to be later,
it's
too.
Much later, yeah.
I just wish it was a bigger screen. You know, 12.5 inches. It's like
small.
Or 12.
But I'm thinking of it as an Android tablet / Chromebook.
Yeah, because last fall there was this talk about this new generation of Chromebooks coming for the Android apps, and this is the first one. It actually took them, I think, longer than they expected.
Right. Well, I've been using, the Chromebook Pixel will run the App Store, so I've been using the App Store on Chromebook Pixel.
Yeah, but you can't buy a Pixel today, right? So
This will replace my Pixel, which I have given to my daughter, who lost her computer in Mexico.
Yikes.
She sounds like a good target for that device.
She left everything in Mexico, like a passport or ATM card.
Oh, no.
Her phone. But that happens. You know, she was there 9 months.
She's trying to get in before the wall gets built or what's going on?
Yeah. She wanted to go back. I said, you can't go back. You have to restock. So I gave her the Pixel because she replaced her MacBook with a higher Chromebook. Higher is a very, as you know, cheap consumer brand. So it was a very inexpensive Chromebook, and she actually loved it. It effectively replaced the MacBook, and she says, I'll get you a MacBook now because you're home and going back to school, in a week. And she said, I like the Chromebook. I said, well, at least here's the Pixel because I'm ordering the new one. How about cars?
Didn't Microsoft usage?
I know. I'm sorry. Didn't Microsoft do some car deals?
They did.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, they started talking about this in a new way last year, because up until last year, there was a big focus at Microsoft to try to get Windows embedded in cars. And last year, they started talking about it differently. They said, you know what? Instead, we're going to do this thing called the connected car strategy. So in that strategy, you don't put Windows in the car. Instead, you connect Microsoft Cloud services, different Azure services for things like maintenance. You know how they do predictive maintenance now with Azure? You could do it on your car. Like, hey, it's time for you to get service, you know, or this is going to happen. They also are connecting up Office 365 and Skype for Business in the car, so you could talk in conference calls and such in your car. So this is all part of a connected car strategy that they're now calling, what do they call it? Something vehicle.
Right.
I'm looking for the exact name. Microsoft Connected Vehicle is what they call it now. And they had some announcements around partnerships with Renault and BMW and Volvo. So none of these have actually committed to putting Cortana in the car, but they are working with Cortana on the back end as part of Cortana Intelligence Suite. So there may be in the future some case where Cortana would be in your dashboard too, further down the line, but that's what they're doing now with cars. They also said, just like they did with Cortana, we're not doing an Echo. They said, we are not building a self-driving car. That's it. You know, other companies may be dabbling in this space, but we are not. We're going to work with the partners who are the car vendors, and that's how we're doing this. So that was them at CES.
I have to say, because the Amazon Echo and Amazon Voice services were so ubiquitous at CES.
Yep.
Did you see a response from Microsoft? Are they going to? I mean, they were talking about that Cortana appliance we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
Anything there, Cortana-ish?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the bit about, you know, I literally said you're behind, and they said behind what? I mean, like, they don't think these kinds of things have much traction. Like,
it's a small market right now.
There's a deeper thing going on that they can excel at that they think is a bigger deal. So it's kind of a longer term play, but you know, they just don't. It's kind of like, you know, if you think about Windows Phone, like from a numbers perspective, any number that matters, you know, Windows Phone never did very well. And so they're kind of approaching it from just a different perspective. Like, we're not going to worry about that. Like, you know, Alexa's the next number of homes and whatever. Right now, it's all very disjointed. And so there were a number of companies signing up with Alexa, but I think this year is going to be kind of make or break, I think, for the Microsoft stuff. And they have this stuff in place. They have the SDK. They have the ability to embed IoT devices. Like, I think this is happening. And so according to them, they've gotten a lot of traction from companies that want to partner on that stuff. So, you know, we'll see, I guess.
Mm. I was reading, I don't know where I saw this. Some people were saying Harman Kardon was there having NDA meetings about that Cortana-powered speaker. But I don't think they announced anything, right? They didn't show it at the show or anything.
Yeah. I got the request to go see them about, you know, Cortana in the car. And I thought it was going to be driving around in the car in the parking lot.
Right.
And that wasn't, it wasn't quite that.
Well, so what is the larger game? What level do they want to play if they don't want to play in the home?
So in other words, what they want is for this thing to be an essential service, right? And in other words, it's not hard to look at what Google and Amazon are doing and sort of see transparently what the base of it is, right? The Alexa makes it really easy to buy stuff at Amazon.
Call it Echo so we don't set off people's dollhouse purchases.
Sorry, Alexa owners. Oh, sorry.
bastard. Bastard, Paul.
Buy a roll of toilet paper. So, and Google is, you know, really good at searching the web, right? What Microsoft wants to focus on is the productivity stuff. They want this thing to have conversations with you about your schedule and scheduling meetings and getting things done. And they feel that that becomes essential over time, not just a nicety, and that's going to be the hook, that you're only going to have probably one relationship with a digital personal assistant. And if this thing becomes essential, it will be that one, not the one that makes it easy to shop at Amazon.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it boils down.
I guess that makes sense. They're a services company, so. Yeah. But Amazon, I mean, Amazon didn't just make the appliance. They made the service, too. And the service is what people are embedding and what everybody's embedding at CES. It's not all about the Echo. It's about Amazon Voice Services.
And it's, you know, over the past year especially, they've dramatically expanded the set of third-party skills, I think they call them.
7,000 skills.
Right. And that's the thing that's kind of the tough hurdle. But their contention is that most of this stuff is actually fairly basic, like the ability to do something like play a song from Spotify.
Yeah,
this is not essential. It's nice, you know. It's nice,
right?
That's the Cortana skill SDK they have coming out, I think, in early February. That one of the things it can do, they say, is to have developers who built an Alexa skill be able to easily bring it over to Cortana.
Yeah.
So now, I'll just remind you that this is also the company that said we'd be able to put Chrome extensions into Edge.
So, I know. So I said allegedly.
Yeah, this theory in this riddle. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. CES, that's it. You, in a nutshell, you avoided long plane flights, 48-hour delays, the CES flu, shoes, then feet that just hurt for days.
Bed bugs.
And bed bugs at Excalibur? Never. And I'm surprised you stayed at Excalibur. I've always wanted to stay there. We used to stay. ZDNet, as you know, Mary Jo, stays across the way at the MGM, which has gotten nicer and nicer.
But I always
look across the way at the Excalibur and think, wow, I wonder what it's like to stay there.
It's terrible. I mean, and I've stayed at real pits. Like I've stayed at Circus a long time. Yeah. Circus, I've stayed at. That place literally looks like it was designed by Nazis.
Yeah.
These places are all gross. And in the past, I've stayed at places that have been demolished that were equally gross, like Imperial Palace and the Frontier.
Right.
This is one of those I think eventually this thing will be destroyed and something nicer will be put there, and that will be a good day.
I think what I've learned, and I'm going to now give you the benefits of my experience in life. What I've learned is high traffic hotels get gross in a couple of years.
Right. Yeah.
You have to renovate constantly. Yeah. New carpet, new furniture, new bedding. Otherwise, it's disgusting. And there's no higher traffic a hotel than Vegas. They have 100% capacity year in, year out. Yeah. So those hotels, if they have not been renovated in 5 years, five years.
5 years is hilarious.
This and thing Excalibur's hasn't been renovated 20 years old.
Easily. Let me just tell you one soul-sucking story. I just want you to imagine how terrible this is. I checked out of that hotel, right? It was the happiest day of my life. And I went to the airport in a cab, and I checked in at the airport, and I had 3 hours before my flight because there were no lines anywhere. It was crazy good. And then everything fell apart. And all of a sudden, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I've been at the airport for 5 hours. And now I have to go back to that hotel.
Oh, that's hell. So
just imagine this, because I had booked the room for the night because I had a red-eye flight. So I still had the room. I had the ticket. I mean, the key. It could go in. I had to take a taxi from the airport back to that of a hotel.
So
go to my room, see the little pile of money I left for the cleaning lady. It was how I left it, obviously. Psychologically, it's impossible to describe how awful that is. It was awful.
It's kind of like
in that bed.
It's kind of like the governor called. You got to No, just kidding.
Why are you trying to talk me into going to the
Super Bowl? This is true. This is exactly what happens, and it's because we need others to suffer with us.
I think that's it. It is.
It's really I want someone else to experience the self-loathing that I live with on a daily basis.
No one can understand how awful it is.
Yeah.
If they haven't done it. Actually, I went to a CES one summer at McCormick Place when it was 100 degrees. And, of course, McCormick Place has a tin roof.
Yeah, I think I was at that one.
And that one was open to the to make it worse, was open to the public.
Yeah.
They briefly had this thought, whoa, what if we open to the public? Mm-hmm. So it meant after the first day, which is media only, it was swarming with kids playing the games and watching the TV. But, it's not a good thing to bemoan this in public because everybody else thinks,
I know. They're privileged. Like, I wish I could go to CES.
Yeah, you're privileged. Your company's sending you there, putting you up. You get to go to Vegas for free.
I know.
They don't understand. It sounds
Yeah. Wow. Well, I had this expectation that I was going to go home and nap in the morning and have a weekend, and I got home just in time to go to bed and get up and work. Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah.
Not to mention the unbelievable hours I spent standing in line. I got the last ticket between Phoenix and Boston on that Sunday.
Had the snowstorm, right? So you were. Yeah,
I did not have to shovel. I mean, my son handled that. That was nice.
That was good.
I still would rather have gone home, but
Hey, get this, and this will add insult to injury. Thank you, Scooter X, for sending us this press release from the Excalibur. It was completely renovated last year.
Oh man!
The Royal.
By the way,
the
bullshit. There's no
just the Royal Tower. Just the Royal Tower.
Oh, okay. So
you got the bad room because half the rooms were renovated. The other half.
Oh, no. That looks no.
That's not the room you were in?
No.
No? Come on, Paul. Admit it. You're just a spoiled tech journalist. Look out the window. You can see King Arthur's
Leo, I only had one king-size bed, for crying out loud. Oh. How good could it have been?
Oh, my God. I had to shower. There was no bath.
I didn't have a blanket. I had those vinyl shades we used to have in the 70s?
Yeah.
That's what pulls down over the window. It doesn't block out light at all.
Little rips in it.
it's just thinking about it makes me want to. Oh,
there's hair on the soap.
I have to go take another shower now because I'm talking about this.
And as if you might steal their crap television remote control from their 1989 yes, Zenith. Yes. It's bolted to the side table.
Oh, man. Oh. The TV was the one from the Ring movies where the creepy woman crumbs crawling out of it while you're asleep. No, it was just, the whole thing was just, that was awful.
Okay, enough.
No. No, no, no.
And there's your CES wrap-up for 2017. We have been celebrating all week the anniversary on January 9th. You know, I'm actually thinking we've been doing this show longer than the iPhone's been out, Paul.
That's true, actually. Right. How innocent I was then thinking Microsoft had a future.
We talked about Windows Mobile.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, we definitely did.
Yep. Amazing.
Although that first summer that the iPhone was out, I mean, I jumped right to the iPhone, and I got a lot of crap from people saying,
I used to write
about how, you know, the one thing that was very true of the iPhone that year, as good as it was, it had no enterprise functionality at all. It didn't integrate with Exchange or ES at all.
Right.
And I used to write about that and complain about it. And but people would say, well, when are you going to rename the site to the Super Site for iPhone if you love it so much? You know. Windows
they still say that.
They still say that exactly.
It's the same guys too. You know, but Windows Mobile was awful.
You should see the hate that Andy Anako gets for using an Android device.
Sure.
On MacBreak Week.
Traitor to the cause.
Traitor. Traitor. Anyway, happy birthday. I still have my iPhone 1 right behind me if you want
it. Yeah, I have the I still have it too. No, I have the iPhone. Yeah. I have the box from the original iPod. I don't know if you want a decoration for your office or whatever.
Sure, I'll take that. Yeah.
I also have the box for the original Kindle, which looks like a book.
Right? Oh, I don't remember that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send them to you.
Behind me, my cabinet has all the old stuff. I saved the first Google phone, the first iPhone, all of that stuff.
Yep.
Speaking of first phones, Nokia is doing its first smartphone. Hmm. What? They're back, baby. We talked about this when the deal Microsoft bought Nokia, that there would come a time when the Nokia could make phones again, right? Is this that time?
Yeah. All right. It must be January, right? January 2017.
Yep. But this is an Android phone, right?
Yes, but it's still a phone, right? They couldn't make phones.
It is. No, I know. Yeah. But it's funny that because remember when Microsoft bought them, everyone's like, no, they should stay independent and make an Android phone. Platform.
So now they are, right? Is this an Android phone?
No. I mean, like that wouldn't have worked, right? In other words, the Nokia of that day had this gigantic infrastructure of factories all around the world that, you know, employees and all that stuff. Like that company, had they switched to Android, would have failed immediately. Like that, it's never going to work. This is kind of like a side project, right? They're hiring outside contractors to build it, and you know it's a different thing. So I mean, I wish them luck. They're never going to make a splash, right? This is never going to be.
So they're not making them. They just
a big deal.
Is somebody licensing their name, or did they got somebody to build a phone under their name?
Someone to build a phone.
Okay,
they designed it. You know,
Okay. It looks like a very kind of generic Android device, but it's big. It's 5.5 inches.
Yep. they're trading on their name, basically, right? They're saying in many parts of the world, Nokia brand is still really key and well-recognized, and they think that's going to carry
them
over.
Chiefly because they are the cheap candy bar phones. Is this a cheap phone?
Well, it's a mid-level phone, but they're going to have a number of phones over time, right? So why they're leading with a mid-level phone is unclear. It's for China only.
Oh, okay.
It's
$246.
Oh, well, that's cheap, but not for China. That's not cheap. Yeah.
It's it's called the Nokia 6 because it's the first one.
It's also 5.5 inches, so.
Right. So
it makes perfect sense.
I guess.
Well, they don't want to call it the Nokia 1. They want to play on their heritage.
They could call it 10.
Yeah.
Right. So China only, so don't get your hopes up, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there'll be more, right? So we'll see. Nokia, you know, you got to remember before Windows Phone became a thing, they were something we heard about from the United States, but they were never really a big deal here, except for maybe a short time when we could get those candy bar phones.
Right.
The smartphone stuff, that never happened here, but in Europe it was humongous. And so it was kind of like the Amiga in that sense where there was this thing that was just really big in Europe, and probably elsewhere in the world too, I should say. But in the United States, for whatever reason, you know, we had Motorola, Palm, BlackBerry, whatever, instead of Nokia. Strange.
It is a strange world we live in, ladies and gentlemen, but that's why Paul Thurrott is here.
Can I bring up one more mobile point that just broke on Mashable?
That's
interesting.
Indeed.
Look at this picture they've got up that says it's a new Samsung phone, which may debut this year, that has the flexible display, and they have a picture of it. It looks a lot like the Courier.
Oh, does it really? Oh, so it's flexible, portrait,
right? Like bendable, right?
And so I was hoping they were going to go back to like flip phones, but apparently this is something
like when you
different.
Open it up, it looks like a little book.
This is on Mac,
right? It opens to a 7-inch tablet. The reports from the Korean Herald.
Well, Lenovo did that too, right? They had the glass keyboard laptop.
Oh, it's cute.
It's very cute.
Mashable still covering tech? What the heck? It doesn't.
Yeah, they still are.
I shouldn't have gone to the front page. There was my mistake. Oh, here it is. Oh, I see. It's a phone. It's not a laptop.
No, it's a phone that opens up.
Oh, I like it.
A little tablet.
Oh, it's cute. Oh, I would buy that. It's concept cute, right? device. It's not a real.
It is. Sure. It is.
It's a Courier.
But it is. And, you know, there was a report right around Christmas, I think, that a bunch of companies were buying into or potentially buying into flexible displays. And Microsoft was mentioned in that, I recall. Hopefully it wasn't Digitime.
So that's what this really is Samsung saying, oh, look at these, what we could do with what we could do.
Right.
With a flexible
in the future.
Display.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to remember with Courier, by the way, you know, a lot of people will bemoan the fact that Microsoft never made that. I mean, at the time, that thing was never going to sell. It was never going to work.
Right.
It was going to be too expensive, right?
The technology has evolved to the point where maybe we can start doing this.
I don't know what I'm watching here. This is some weird Samsung. Oh, here it is.
It
was like they had a hipster come in who had a Bluetooth earpiece and a.
I like the size of it. You know, I like the.
Well, but that's what many phones look like if they're in a case, right? A flip case.
Yeah.
Except that,
But it's a nice, in other words, folded up, it's pocketable.
Yeah, that's like.
And then you open it up and you can actually see it.
You got a tablet. I would buy that. So that's because it's flexible. That's the whole message here. That's actually all one screen that bends in half.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's going to get the girl because he has better nerd equipment.
Look at that guy.
She just wants to steal the phone out of his pocket.
The hipster hat.
I'm going to go with this guy because he's got a flexible phone.
Phone by Samsung.
I love his phone. Yeah, that never happens. Okay, I think we should wait a minute. One more story. Is this a reorg? Not another reorg.
Yeah, reorg to start the new year.
They do this every year?
You know, it's kind of a weird time for this one because a lot of times they do reorgs right before their new fiscal year starts, which is July 1. But at the start of this year, they announced there's a reorg in their sales and partner organization happening February 1st. And two interesting things are going to happen in this reorg. So they're going to take these two different partner groups they have now. One's an enterprise partner group. One's a small and mid-sized partner group. And they're going to mush them together into one group. So that's one Microsoft.
Is that the business term for this organization? Mush
it together. Yep. And then they're also taking some of their existing partner organizations. Paul will remember Gabriella Schuster, who we've met with before in the partner group. She and a couple other people are all going to this new one Microsoft partner group. So they're kind of bringing a lot of different disparate teams together in this org. This is basically the first time that Judson Althoff, who's the head of the commercial business at Microsoft, is kind of putting his stamp on the company since Kevin Turner left. When Kevin Turner left, they didn't replace him. He was the COO at Microsoft. And instead, Judson Althoff became the executive vice president, and he runs this big part of Microsoft called Worldwide Commercial Business. This is sales partner. This is like a huge, huge part of Microsoft. And they're reorging that to start the year. So that's pretty big. We'll see. We'll learn more about this. Paul and I will in Washington, D.C. this summer when we go to the partner show.
Oh,
cool. And you know what is awesome about Washington, D.C., aside from the fact that it's Washington and is inherently
it's
awesome?
It's not Las Vegas.
Yep. And if I get trapped, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. Plus, I could drive home in like 8 hours.
Yep.
You could take the
It's not going to be a snowstorm in July, right. Guaranteed.
Oh, even with global warming. It's sweaty in July, though.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very hot. Ooh.
That was the place, remember, the last time we were there, it rained so hard, it actually knocked the contact out of my eye.
Yep.
It was the hardest rain. It was so crazy. Yeah.
We ran to our hotel rooms because it was like the storm was coming and we saw it coming and we're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it was like I was getting shot in the head by rain,
You gonna stay at the Trump Hotel?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it's,
for sure.
It's the thing to do. You don't want to get on his bad side.
They have cameras up there in every room. So
in every room.
I'm good about this.
Ask for fresh sheets. That's all I'm saying. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. We're going to get to the back of the book, the tips, the tricks, the beer. Oh, the beer.
But especially after last week's disaster of a beer pick.
Well, he didn't even pick a beer. He just said, drink low-carb beer, except it tastes like crap.
I have a good one for him this week.
Oh, good. Finally, a beer Paul can drink. Yeah. Finally. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. I had such fun. My son was out during Christmas break. He's gone back now to Boulder, back to his senior year, his last semester in college. But one of the things that really gratified me is he told me he loves to cook. He loves to cook. And I feel like my job is done. That is a great thing to hear from your kid that he wants to cook. Blue Apron, I wish I'd had Blue Apron his whole life, but you know, I think lately in the last year when we've been using Blue Apron, I think he's seen all the things you can do. It actually is a fact that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often, cook together. What is Blue Apron? Well, it's pretty cool. It's a company that delivers fresh ingredients and recipes to your door, just exactly the right amount, to make an amazing meal in a refrigerated box with fresh meats, vegetables, fish, never frozen. Their mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standard for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, pre-portioned ingredients, exactly the right amount, never too much, never too little, and each meal can be made in 40 minutes or less. And by the way, I think people think, oh, that's going to be expensive. No, it's actually less than shopping for this, and it's a lot easier. Grocery store, on average, 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. And this is good stuff. This is the stuff you would buy if you were shopping. You know, the delicious, sustainable meats and vegetables and my mouth waters. Go to blueapron.com/twit right now and look at what's on the menu this week, because you're going to get your first three meals free with free shipping. Blue Apron ships to 99% of the continental United States. Look what's on the menu this week. Spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake. Pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion, rice, and spinach. Now, you may say, I don't know what that is. What's the piccata? You're going to learn, and then you're going to, oh, I love the piccata. You got to have the piccata. They have all the instructions you need in videos on the website as well that will help you get all the techniques down. You're not going to become a chef, but what you are going to do is get confidence and be able to make amazing meals. You make it once with Blue Apron's help, you can make it again. Mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas. I want that with lime sour cream. Three meals free. Get cooking. Go to blueapron.com/twit and get your first three free with free shipping. blueapron.com/twit. Time for the back of the book, Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. And let's kick things off with you, Paul, and some tips.
I was looking back at our tips and picks from August 4th, 2011.
Oh, what were they?
When marriage, it's nothing. It's like a Roku tip, and then Skype for iPad was my software pick of the week.
There you go.
We were so young.
Only 5 years ago. That's not so different.
Yeah. All right. So we mentioned earlier that Windows Essentials is dead. Back in, I think in December, I wrote an article about how Microsoft was going to end support for Windows Essentials.
I love this.
Dead
joke.
I distract myself with my pictures. So it happened yesterday, was the last day. And if you go to the site today, it's gone. And so at the bottom of that article, if you scroll down to the bottom there, I have an update. And actually, as of right now, you can install it over the web or get the offline installer, which should work going forward if you want to get Windows Movie Maker in particular, because there's no other way to get it. And so I downloaded both of these things just in case. I verified that the web installer still worked today. I feel like that stuff's not publicly accessible from their site, like if someone else sent me the links. So those links could disappear at any time. If you want to get this thing in an offline form so you can install it later, you should do so today or as soon as you see this, because it could disappear and probably will.
It's more time than just Movie Maker, right? But Movie Maker is kind of the one that you really...
Photo Gallery is in there as well. That's actually pretty good. I use that to tag photos, you know, for dates and so forth. So if you scan in a bunch of old photos and want to tag them so they have the correct date, you can use that application. And then I think that's about it.
They still do the blog writing program and the...
Yeah, but that you can get that publicly because it's been open sourced.
Oh,
and so now there's a public version
of
that.
Because that was... Yep. I liked that.
Yeah, OneDrive really comes as part of Windows. So the mail program is out of date. I mean, but
right, you don't want that, yeah, for sure.
So, and then I was talking to the guys behind AppRaisin over at AdDuplex. They, you know, every week they send me a list of like the top picks, app picks from the week. And I said, you know, it's 2017. Can I just get the ones for Windows 10 for PCs and tablets? I mean, I don't think throwing out like a Windows Mobile pick makes sense this year anymore. And so he did that. And boy, is it a kind of a wasteland of choices. The UWP store thing is continues to be kind of the Achilles heel for Windows 10. And so I actually downloaded two of the apps that were higher up in the list, and one of them wouldn't run at all. And the other one was this garbage video player thing that was like normally $30 supposedly, but is free this week. And I'm not even going to tell you the name because you shouldn't own it. It's terrible. So the thing I picked, because I'm kind of looking through the list, like what is, you know, like what changed or is new or whatever. I ended up picking OneNote for Windows 10. And I've talked about this app before, and we mentioned it actually on the show as well. But just to be clear, it's free. It's part of Windows 10. So you kind of just get it in the box. Obviously, there's some maturity that could happen from like a UI perspective and maybe from even a functionality perspective. But I actually find it's good enough. I use it a lot of times for the show here, and I use it down when I do the other podcast as well. But it's about to get a big UX update, right? So Microsoft, I think it's Microsoft, someone has been teasing this coming UX update. And so it's possible this year we'll see OneNote really mature on Windows 10. And I'd like to see that for all the Office apps, because frankly, I think that could be and should be the vanguard for this UWP generation of apps. So it was updated, but there's a bigger update coming. And so it's something that's just there on Windows 10. I think a lot of people don't realize it. It's free for everyone. I think a lot of people don't realize that. So that's my, I know it's sort of, I feel like I'm not giving it enough credit because it really is a great app, but there just isn't a lot going on with mobile apps on the Windows side right now. It's just kind of a fact. So,
Should you have like both OneNote from UWP and OneNote 2016, the desktop version? Would it be worth having both?
Well, it's in Windows 10, right? So you get it. And if you install Office from Office 2016, from Office 365, you will get OneNote 2016. And so which you could have both. There's no reason not to. We had mentioned in the context of build 15,002 that there's Windows Shift S.
Oh yeah,
we'll
That's a reason to do it.
Screenshot.
Yeah,
that's built into Windows 10. So that's something. That's one of the things that's coming. You know, for normal people, you'll be able to. That's there because OneNote is there.
OneNote 2016.
OneNote. Well, today it's OneNote 2016, but in the future it'll just be OneNote.
Right.
Mobile. Yeah.
I mean, it comes with it. So you're basically recommending an app everybody already has.
But a lot of people, yes.
A lot of people don't use it, though.
A lot
like
of people,
me.
I know that you have
a lot
it.
Of people don't.
I get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing I should throw out too, you know, we mentioned there were like a million changes in this build. They also stepped back from the cliff where paint.exe loaded that new terrible 3D paint program. They're going to go back to the way it was. So,
good.
Paint is free, which is great because, like I said earlier, a couple of shows ago, I make my Christmas card with that thing. So I use Paint every single day. Like, I actually really like Paint. But it's not a mobile app, so I don't It's not going to be in this list, unfortunately.
I like your Christmas card so much. I'm keeping it.
It's always here. Yeah.
It's always here.
Nice. Yeah,
put it right there.
I'll send you a poster of it.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be really great. I'd put it on my bedroom wall.
Yes. Thank you.
Right next to my Black Sabbath poster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything under black light, but
thank you. Man.
Good work on that.
Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
My enterprise pick is about something Microsoft's building or about to start building, and that is a category of apps called Human Capital Management.
Oy.
What is HCM? HCM is not the same as HR. It's a little different. It's more about the kinds of applications that are about managing your career.
It's for you.
Professional development, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. So when Microsoft bought LinkedIn, a lot of people were saying, oh, I wonder if they're going to use LinkedIn somehow to get into this HCM space, because this is a really hot market. Oracle's in there, SAP, Workday. And Microsoft never said they were going to build software that would be in the HCM market. It turns out they are building it. At least it looks like it from a job posting that I found this week. There is a job post that says, our specific team charter is to build the next generation of talent engagement applications, helping businesses to manage their most important asset, people. We are building apps to address the whole gamut of needs from hire to retire. So right now, the way Microsoft addresses this market is very limitedly. They do it through their Dynamics AX product, and they've extended that a little bit into their Dynamics 365 operations module. But it seems to me, based on this blog post, that they're going to go a lot further than that, and that we might see a whole suite of HCM applications from them, mm-hmm. which will give them a better competitive position against Oracle and their ilk. The problem for partners is some partners make HCM apps right now, and they're probably freaking out at reading this because they're thinking, great, that's what I do, and here comes Microsoft. So more to come. Microsoft won't comment on this, but I believe they're going to be entering a new market with this kind of software and services.
The LinkedIn acquisition has gone through now, right? It was approved. And so now when they say that LinkedIn had to remove its app from the App Store in Russia, that's really Microsoft.
Yeah.
Because it was LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Any comment from Microsoft on that?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there was any comment on that.
I mean, the Russian law says your data has to be stored on a Russian server, Russian citizens' data. And LinkedIn doesn't do that, obviously. So,
yeah. Yeah, right now we're in kind of a weird time when you're trying to get answers about LinkedIn things, because Microsoft is just in the midst of starting to integrate with them. So it's kind of tricky to figure out who's answering for the company.
I wonder if one way they'll solve that is by setting up Russian servers.
I wonder.
They must have to deal with that across the board, right? One drive and everything else.
I know. Yeah, you got to wonder about that. Yeah.
Do they do that in Russia? Do they have?
That's the law.
Do cloud? I don't know. I mean,
that's the law, but it's a new law. Yeah. So,
right?
Oh, is it? Yeah.
A relatively.
So
new law.
Every software company is going
to
face
all
it,
gonna
right?
Have to do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of LinkedIn, if you were among the people who still have a Windows phone, who got an email this week saying LinkedIn was dropping their Windows phone app, it was an error. No. Yeah.
How do you send an email like that in error?
I don't know. And you know what
was
crazy? Did you see the email? It said, if you are running this, we advise you to go iOS or Android instead.
Oh.
Well, so, okay, if it makes you feel better, if you go to the Samsung website and look at that new Chromebook, it says right underneath the name of the device, Samsung recommends Windows 10.
Oh, there's one.
That's funny.
Yep.
That's good. I like it. That's called having your cake and eating it too.
And throwing it at someone while you're eating it.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Project Codename Pick of the Week. I almost gave it away. I almost gave away the super secret code name.
Speaking of eating, I'm making my own segue here. The codename pick of the week is Project Osaka. Osaka is a city in Japan that's well known for its food and drink.
They eat there?
That was my segue there. I have not eaten there yet, but I hope next time I'm in Japan to go to Osaka because I've really good things about
it. I can't wait. Yeah. Kyoto, too.
I know. Yeah. So Osaka, our friend the walking cat says, is a product that Microsoft introduced or at least talked about back in 2015 that was called CollabDB. When they first talked about CollabDB, they said it was going to be a way to share lists. After that happened, Microsoft bought Wunderlist. Now the descriptions of CollabDB that I've seen more recently say it's about sharing tables between people. Project Osaka is supposed to be right now in private testing among some Office 365 users. I have not found anyone who's testing it. So if you are and you're watching Windows Weekly, I would like to talk to you. But that's all we know right now about it. It's called
question.
Osaka.
Sorry.
Yes. What is your related?
You just reminded me of this. I meant to write this and I never did. Wunderlist is being renamed. Do you know that?
Is it being renamed to that Project Cheshire thing?
No, it's being okay. So Ryan Gavin told me this, and I actually went back and talked to PR afterwards, and I said, "Listen, I'd never heard this, but he said this, and I just want to make sure I can write about it." And she said, "Oh, it was in a blog post from December. Yeah, it's fine." And I looked at the blog post, and it's not in there. But he said that it was being renamed to Microsoft To Do.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so that's not familiar to you either.
That's a better name. Frankly.
Yeah. So he said Microsoft, the exact quote is Microsoft To Do is the new name of Wunderlist.
Oh, wow. Wunderlist.
So how does Cheshire fit in with Wunderlist and To Do? Remember that whole Cheshire thing?
Yeah. Their To Do stuff is a little bit like their sync stuff was 5 years ago, where they have like a bunch of different things for some reason.
I know.
And I feel like
planner.
They need to kind of.
I know.
Well, and just the stuff built into every version of Outlook that known to God. And I don't know why they have so much different stuff, but. It seems like they need to consolidate it all.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's interesting. I did not know that. Things you learn on Windows Weekly.
They bought the company, the German company
they
that
did.
Makes Wunderlist, which they were the Wunderkinds. I can't remember what they were called.
I know. What was
of
the name?
It was something like that. So it made sense, right? I can't remember, but it all made sense.
Well, that's the thing that Cortana integrates with for all the to-do stuff, right?
Oh,
if you use Windows 10 Cortana and you make a to-do list, I guess you could do it on its own. But what it wants to do is integrate with Wunderlist.
Time ever got a notification on my Surface Book saying, "Would you like to make a to-do list?"
Yeah, and that's what that is.
And then it launched Cortana. Okay, cool. So that's Wunderlist. I think Microsoft To Do makes a lot more sense than Wunderlist.
Mm-hmm.
It was 6 Wunderkinder.
Yeah. So then you'd understand why Wunderlist would make sense. Wunderkinder. That would make sense, but now makes no sense now. So it kind of was, I think the writing was on the wall. That was inevitable.
Yeah.
It is a strange name.
Yeah.
It is.
But that was also Project Cheshire.
Yeah. Project Cheshire is also a shared list thing, I think.
Oh, it's not Project Cheshire.
No. So Project Cheshire Cheshire and Osaka are both at least originally were about sharing lists. So how those fit in with To Do now, I don't know.
I don't know this company.
Well, it's
they keep it interesting.
Yeah,
they do.
You know what else is keeping it interesting? Beer. Our beer pick of the week.
Beer makes it more interesting.
It does. And I've taken to heart Paul's challenge of trying to find some lighter beers that are flavorful and not horrible. I found one for you. It's 3.5% only, which is great. And it's from a brewery in New York called Sloop. Sloop All Day Rosé Berliner Weiss.
Oh,
so, you know Berliner Weiss, it's that German style where it's a wheat beer. It's usually slightly sour. What Sloop did was they took a Berliner Weiss and they added some rosé wine, I think.
That sounds awful.
It sounds awful. It is delicious.
Well, you know what, though? There are takes on, it's very common with a wheat beer to add flavors, right? So you could have strawberry wheat, pumpkin, well, not pumpkin, watermelon wheat or whatever. So actually, this makes some sense.
It's very tasty. It says they fermented it with red wine juice and it mimics a rosé wine. It looks like a rosé wine. It kind of tastes like a rosé wine. And it's only 3.5%.
What's the carb hit?
Well, it's only 3.5 ABV, right?
So I know. So that makes me think it's low.
Can't be very carbonaceous.
Right. I mean, compared to the beers I've been picking lately, Imperial Stout.
Night and day. Like, the last beer you picked was like slicing into a double chocolate cake.
Ooh. It was. You know? But it was a holiday beer, so come on.
Sure.
Yeah. This is your New Year's resolution beer when you're trying to lose weight and still have a fun time drinking beer.
And it's sessionable. That's a word Mary Jo Toten taught me.
Yes.
You could drink it all day. That's why they call it all day rosé.
That's right.
Nice.
Paul, I'm thinking of you. Don't worry.
I bet you it's a lower carb. I mean, that's why light beer is lower alcohol too, right? It's just that's they go hand in hand.
I'm so screwed.
500 episodes. I think we should just call it quits, don't you? Let's go.
We had a good run.
It's been a great thing, but
sure.
God, I just can't imagine coming back and doing 501.
Come on, here's to the next 500.
I want 1,000 episodes. We could do that. That's only 10 more years. Let's go for it.
Just in time for me to retire.
Yeah,
perfect.
Paul Thurrott is at thurrott.com. That's his blog where he writes about everything Windows. He also writes books. In fact, you've got to get his field guide to Windows 10. That's available at leanpub.com. And he does a podcast in another network, which shall remain nameless.
The redheaded stepchild.
My other show, he says.
Yep.
My other son, you know. Right. Don't worry. I love you both just as much.
Actually, Leo, I love one of you more.
I don't want to hear about it. If it's Andrew Zarian, it's going to break my heart. Where can we find that other podcast? Oh, look, he's drinking. Mary Jo Foley is also available at all around the clock at allaboutmicrosoft.com, where she writes her ZDNet blog. Where can we find your other podcast? What is it called? It's called
What the Tech.
What the Tech. And it's and you do it right before this show.
We usually do it on Tuesday, but citing my mental breakdown from CAS, I pushed it back to Thursday.
Good man. Good man. And you can find that where?
Guysfromqueens.com, I guess.
Sounds like a really great operation.
Leo, would get along.
I know. I love Andrew. No, I really like Andrew and his beautiful wife. They are a good looking couple. It's kind of disgusting.
Too good looking.
It's disgusting. It's like, what is with those two? Models? Yeah, you'll wear them out.
Yeah, I'll kill them.
I used to be gorgeous too. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC, 501 next week. And yes, we're going to keep doing it. I'm just joking around. If you want to get audio or video, we have it on the website, twit.tv/ww. You can get it at youtube.com/twit. Actually, that's where we also live stream there now, which is nice. And you'll get a link. You can get a link at that page to the Windows Weekly YouTube channel. And of course, you can subscribe. And every podcast application has Windows Weekly. Watch live, watch after the fact, doesn't matter. Just watch. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.